Hello, and welcome to the Thinking Elixir podcast, where we cover the news of the community and learn from each other. My name is Mark Erickson.
I'm Cade Ward.
And I'm David Bernheisel.
Let's jump into the news. First up, just wanted to share a blog post and project that I was able to finally publish, something I've been working on for a while, and I kind of alluded to it from time to time. So what it really is the ability to, like, at home, I've got my laptop sitting on my lap. I do not have a big GPU or anything like an NVIDIA thing dangling off of my laptop sitting here on my lap, but I want to do AI development. So what this is like, hey, I can do at home AI development with Elixir and Bumblebee running on Fly GPUs. And the cool part is I included a ready to deploy project that hosts Llama 2, 7B, Mistral 7B, Zephyr 7B LLMs, making it easy to run Bumblebee commands directly from your laptop to the model running on a Fly machine with a GPU. And honestly, it really does feel like it's native and just right there next to you, because Elixir with processes and clustering just makes it incredible, because like I can just say like nx.serving.batchrun and this command, and it finds the serving through the cluster. No API calls or anything like that. And it just talks to the serving, which is a process. It's running on the server on Fly, runs the GPU commands, streams the results back to my laptop, all right there in my code. And it's really fun that you can do that. And what I think is amazing, though, is that it makes it easy to do local development with AI. Otherwise, the alternative is we're either using AI as a service, like ChatGPT or something like that, and you're coding to an API. But that's not Elixir. That's not your hosted model. Maybe you fine-tuned a model that you want to use. Can't do that. And the other aspect is that you don't have to keep redeploying something to the server to test it out. I keep my normal developer workflow of just iterating, IO inspect, and doing everything. And that's where all my business logic is. That's where all the normal development flow is. It's just on my laptop. And I get to keep that. So yeah, I was really happy to be able to finally get that published out there with a project that shows you, you know, just drop this on your server. It sets up, allocates a GPU, allocates a persistent volume. So you cache these, you know, multi-gig LLM files that you're downloading from Hugging Face. Finally, whew, got that one published.
That's awesome, man. That's a cool workflow. I can see it now. All the AI bros at Starbucks with their iPads doing AI development.
With the iPads.
Yeah, because they can attach Fly GPUs to their iPads running Terminal. Just kidding. Well, hey, the internet avoided a catastrophe this past week. I don't know a lot of the details, but I'll give a summary of how I understand what went down. So there is a compression algorithm called the XZ. All right, and a lot of Linux distributions, a lot of computers generally use this. It's mostly computer facing. Like if you're passing files around to like your friends or whatever, you're probably using Zips or 7Zips or something, but not XZ. It's kind of a specialty, I guess. I don't know.
But what's worth pointing out is it's very low in the stack.
Yes, very low.
This is like systemd passes off information when talking to SSH servers, and you're doing compression over the wire stuff, like very low level. So like that's where this is coming in.
I'm reminded of that XKCD like image where you got all these building blocks and you got this one little piece over here that's like holding yes. The whole thing up. This is kind of like that, right?
And now I got to find it and try and leave it in the show notes.
And so anyway, this application over the course of a couple of years has had a slow trickle of corrupted backdoor implementation being put into it. And just this like past week, a researcher at Microsoft. This is the crazy part. Like how this all happens is just kind of crazy. It's a wonderful story. A book is going to be written about this one day. I guarantee it. So this researcher at Microsoft, he's running like benchmarks. He's like SSHing into his server or something. And he notices that the call is taking like half a second longer. Half a second longer. You imagine you're at your computer. I'm like, I blinked and that was too long. You know, like... And so he decides to look into it and discovers through a series of commits that there seems to be new code in here going in a specific route conditionally built on a targeted environments. For example, Debian with OpenSSH and it only happens when it's started by a systemd or something like that, right? Very specific things. And it wasn't even replayable too. So like if you were debugging it and you did the same thing, you know, and you pass that to like somebody else to like, hey, can you check this? Like they wouldn't have it necessarily. It's very subtle, very, very complex. And if I recall correctly, the fact that it took like half a second longer was due to the backdoor having bugs.
Yes.
So anyway, just a crazy amount of, like, it's just a very interesting story. All that to say is that this was an effort over years to essentially pressure open source developers into, quote, fixing things. And they did like make helpful commits too. Like they did actually like do meaningful work here. They were just also doing this bad work to introduce these backdoors. I really can't blame anybody on this, you know, like, but it all started with like pressuring open source developers saying that you don't have time, you can give it to somebody that has, you know, more time available that can care for it some more. They relent. They say, okay, I'll step away. I'll give maintainership over to this other person. Now they have full control over that library. They can publish whatever they really want without a lot of review during the development, at least. Continues to be open source, which is nice, right? That's how we're able to confirm this. So check one for open source, right? So all that to say is, yeah, over the course of a couple of years, this backdoor was introduced. And it got to the point where it was in the testing environments for Debian-based Linux distributions. Rolling distributions could have also been affected. It was on the way out the door for most people before this fellow just happened to notice that there was a 500 millisecond delay on an OpenSSH connection.
And from what I gathered, there were already some changes that were happening with systemd that would have exposed this problem.
Yeah.
And those were already in the works. The people who were perpetrating this felt like, oh gosh, there's a little bit more of a time crunch. So they started to push harder, like reaching out to the Fedora project saying, you know, hey, you really need to pull these changes in. And they were really, really, what they were targeting was like the LTS distributions, right? Like the stuff that people put on their servers and leave for years.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like the enterprise, that's who they were going after. It's not like the hobbyist or anything like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a multi-year, from 2021 through 2023, concerted effort. I think the main point that was worth being aware of, which you already hit on, David, which is that they were pressuring overworked and burned out maintainers. And then like this person had been, you know, doing some commits and helping out and saying, here's some new testing framework stuff. And then they put out a really complex commit. So, you know, that would take a lot of effort to review. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, come these other, you know, personas, could be real people, could have been the same actor under different accounts. Just out of nowhere, come in and say, you know, you're doing a terrible job as a maintainer. You know, you got to let someone else take over.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all that kind of social pressure, right? And just like thankless job of already maintaining this core project that's like super low level in the stack. And just, it is one of those pieces that's kind of forgotten, but it's super relied upon. The main thing that I took away from this is the idea that nation state actors, you know, we don't actually know the person who's behind these accounts, one or more accounts, but it does have the feeling of being a nation state actor because it's prolonged, designed, concerted over years, kind of feels that way. And if you think that you have people who are working in Elixir libraries or Phoenix or, you know, probably something even more mainstream is what you'd be going for if you're a nation state actor, like more low level like this. But still, just the idea that people could go after you just because you're in a position of maintaining something and, you know, you have life. It's not your full-time job.
I'm not working for the DOD.
And you're like, gosh, why am I getting all this hassle over this?
I want to point out another thing here is one of the mechanisms that they used to like obscure this was that the release binaries for these were different from the actual source code. That was another thing. So what was actually distributed to package maintainers was not quite what was on GitHub, right? And that shows a infrastructure supply chain attack kind of tactic. And so, and just, you know, heads up that Hex is a supply chain for Elixir. by the way, none of this has to do with Elixir, but if this was an Elixir library, for example, like here's the way that we could have found it. Years ago, we merged in, and by we, I mean like the Hex developers and Jola Dev on Twitter, merged in a tool called diff.hex.pm. And what this tool does, you go there and it's just like an input box. You search for a Hex library like Phoenix, and you can diff from versions to new versions, right? It's more or less what you would see on GitHub, diffing between tags or commits. But Hex's version of this is about what is published on there, right? Most folks are probably going to look at GitHub for diffs because we're just used to that. But just know that that is not exactly what was actually pushed up to your package supply chains, right? Your NPMs and your gems and your Hex. So you can use diff.hex.pm to see what was actually in there that was different, which is just a good reminder. This was foreseen, you know, years ago. That was a helpful tool. It was merged into like hex.pm proper. So it's available to everybody. And that's the UI portion of that. But there's also like a CLI portion of that. So you can do mix hex.diff and kind of do the same thing there. Today, you ought to be thankful that we have tools that help us catch those kinds of things. But it could still happen. And in this case, this was like, you know, binary files too that people are probably not going to be looking at, you know, like the bytes of things. This was a tough bug.
Yeah. So, you know, we're not going to go any more depth on it. You've probably already heard about this by the time you hear this recording. We've included a couple links to some background and some more information on it if you're interested.
I have no idea who the original researcher that found this was, but my first thought was thank your local ADHD person for being hyper-focused on a half a second slowdown on something, because that was a stroke of luck. The focus to like just chase that down, you know, at such a crucial point before this thing gets out to like the stable branches for a lot of stuff. And we haven't said it already, but I'll make it clear. This was not targeted towards Mac OS. It was not targeted through Windows. Your home computers probably would have been fine. This was definitely targeted to hosted like cloud servers, right? Like running Debian, Ubuntu, that kind of stuff, Fedora. The typical use case, at least, is for cloud servers. So yeah, your computer's probably fine, but just heads up.
Fly.io. It's a great place to run Elixir apps. With many global regions, a private network that makes it easy to cluster your app, and a powerful CLI, it's something you should really try out. Experience it for yourself at fly.io. All right, and next up, I saw a recent X/Twitter post that was talking about, you know, hey, maybe I could customize the way IO inspect works in my application by writing this little function that I could call. And I realized that, you know, IEX has the ability to do this built in. There's probably a lot of people out there who don't know about this. So this is like a little PSA, just want to make people aware that you can do this. So what it is, we got to link it to the docs in the show notes because it's part of the IEX docs too. But you can actually create a .iex.exs file. It can live in your project, so you can customize the behavior of IEX in that specific project, or you can put it globally like in your user home directory. When IEX starts up, it looks for a local .iex.exs file, and if it doesn't see it there, it goes up globally, and then it executes that into IEX before it even like shows you the prompt. And what this lets you do is a lot of customization. So I've got a shared GitHub gist in here of mine. I've actually assembled mine over years, pulling in ideas and things from different places and different people. So it's a conglomeration. Almost none of it is mine, right? I just like took good ideas from other people. But what it is you can customize like ANSI colors, and you can say, I want what color for symbols versus strings versus booleans versus integers. And I want maps to be like this. And oh, I want to sort map keys. And that's one of the customizations I added when that was a more recent change, to make them so they would always have a deterministic order. And, you know, saying how I want inspect to work, that I want it to not truncate certain display, like when it's a large object or something like large structure. So yes, there's a lot of great stuff you can do with .iex files.
And another tip here is that you can do those per project or per your own like personal setting, right? It'll first look at your project's IEX file. If it's not there, it'll look at your home directory's IEX file. I imagine a lot of this like customization, like Mark's yours especially, looks like just give me a cooler prompt or some personal settings for how to inspect things. But if you're in a project, you might want to like auto alias some things too, like repo. Like I always forget that. Right. I got a repo, like my app.repo. I just do repo nowadays, right? So your project can do that auto aliasing kind of thing. But then if you do have a project level IX file, you want to like check to see if the home directory one is there too and load that as well. Like IX won't load both for you. It'll load the first one it finds. Be mindful of your fellow developers if you're committing these IX defaults.
Just a call out to one of the things that's in the docs for this, and we got a link to that, is like you said, the first line could be import my global IX EXS file. This is the one that's checked in with my project, and then I have my local preferences that are stored globally, and I can actually load those in. Then it has features like import if available and this module within your project. That way it doesn't blow up if either it's not available or you have that line in your global one and it doesn't actually apply to some other project, right? So it's pretty nice.
All right. Well, cool. I love PSAs like that. It always makes your life a little easier, a little bit more custom, a little bit more you. So that's pretty cool. All right. Next up, we're going to have a round of conference updates. So coming up, we got ElixirConf EU, Europe's largest Elixir conference. That's elixirconf.eu. This is going to be held in Lisbon, Portugal. It's also virtual. It's going to be held soon, as in like next week, April 18th yep. through the 19th. And one of the speakers teased what he's going to be talking about. And he shares the current state of their journey on retrofitting a Nissan Leaf engine into the 07 VW Group Polo and building a new and open vehicle control system, the OVCS. If you know what any of that means, you're a car guy. Redesigning the engine controller and infotainment systems with off-the-shelf components. Here comes the cool part. Running with Elixir. So yeah, you can have Elixir running in your car instead of JavaScript or in addition to JavaScript.
Yeah, they're saying how they had to introduce like these Arduino components and things and some nerve stuff to get these two different pieces of technology to talk to each other.
Yeah.
And like to be the little buffer and translate stuff. And I was just thinking, wow, you know, you could really customize a vehicle like that. And it's kind of crazy, you know, to go to that level.
It is crazy.
And then you think, how well do you trust your code as you're driving down the interstate?
Please do not. Oh, man. Lots of fail-safe systems for sure. Yeah, it just reminds me of all the Boeing stuff recently. I think they have that kind of stuff, too. They have like a sensor with no failback. And that's like, anyway. That also reminds me, I think there is an Elixir like side app for Teslas, by the way, like Tesla Mate, I think. So in case you're into Tesla, there is a cool Elixir built application for helping you, you know, love your Tesla more. Tesla, by the way, also has a lot of JavaScript in it. So go ahead and start that free trial of full automation driving and let's just see how it goes. I guess that brings a whole lot more meaning to let it crash, huh?
All right, and next up, NervesConf US. So there is a one-day single-track conference. There's eight speakers who have been announced. This will be May 9th, 2024 in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It's actually being hosted at the same venue as Gig City Elixir the day before, which actually makes it really easy. You know, if you're wanting to justify making the trip, that you can say, oh, well, I'll go to this NervesConf and I get to attend an ElixirConf, a little regional one as well. So yeah, that's really cool and coming up.
Yeah, so speaking of, you already said it, but Gig City Elixir is going to be right after NervesConf on May 10th through the 11th. Speakers have all been announced there as well. It's going to be a great setup. Got some coworkers there, Todd Resedek, Chris Keithley, Randall Thomas, Frank Cunlith, Zach Daniel, of course, lots of folks, Lars Vickman and Andrea Leopardi. Lots of folks are going to be there. Star lineup in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
And I do like some of those smaller conferences too, they feel very accessible. It doesn't feel so scary to go up and talk to the presenter after their talk or just hang out with them in the hall because it's all single track, right? So it's not like you have to juggle your choices and there's just a lot more going on with the breaks, it feels like.
Yeah.
They have a great feel. If you're looking for maybe your first conf, smaller ones like that, the regional ones, especially if you're wanting to maybe speak at a conference, those are always a great option for applying to. But unfortunately, you've missed any like opportunity to speak at these conferences. They are set in stone.
Maybe next year.
Yep.
But you still have a chance with ElixirConf US as of time of recording, at least. By the time you hear this, I think they have closed the CFP, but The CFPs are still going right now for ElixirConf US. That conference will be in Orlando, Florida at SeaWorld on August 27th through the 30th. So if you miss any of these other ones, ElixirConf is probably the largest one. You'll see a lot of star players there as well. Maybe a lot of the same speakers from Gig City. We'll see. But ElixirConf US will be at SeaWorld, so that's a great destination place to book a couple extra nights there, maybe with your family, and go see some nice attractions while you're there. Orlando also is the home of Disney World, so if you've never been, hey, make a trip of it. The biggest expense is getting there, usually. So if you can get there, you can have another bigger expense with Disney World. But it'll be fun, at least.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you'll join us next time on Thinking Elixir.